Hello, everybody. Welcome to Five Rounds. Jesus Christ, today has been a madness. Carlos, are you ready?
As ready as I can be.
Welcome, everybody, to the Five Rounds podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am, of course, Mag Zender. With me this very, very early morning, 6 o'clock, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Tired, but I'm good.
Yeah, well, today is going to be a little bit different to how we normally do these shows. Normally, me and Carlos have both watched the UFC card and we kind of give our analysis. But I had the pleasure, I want to say pleasure, of also trying to watch the Triller card. So I'm going to give a little bit of feedback about that as well. So let's get into it. First of all, let's go through these UFC prelims. We started with Tony Graveler getting the knockout against Anthony Burchak. Decision in the lightweights with Austin Hubbard picking up the win against Dakota Bush. Gerald Merschot getting back onto winning form with a first-round sub against Bartosz Fabianski. Jessica Pena coming back and getting the decision against Lupita Godinez. And then a very weird end to the feature prelim in the heavyweight division. Alexander Romanov picking up the decision, even though he basically got knocked out with a low blow. Something that, ironically, we'll probably be talking about later on. But let's get on to this main card. And like I said, I'm going to be giving throwing a lot of this over to Carlos because he was sensible and he watched the UFC card. So we started with the violent Bob Ross, Luis Pena taking on Alex Munoz. Carlos, what did you make of this fight?
The judges never give it to Luis Pena, but I'm going to have to watch his fight again because I did think Alex actually won the fight. I think he pushed the pace a lot more. It were more of a stand-up fight, even though Luis was the one who had the bigger reach. He wasn't doing much. It was just like one jab here, one hook here, whereas Alex, he was looking for the combos, he was looking for the time, he was looking for the counters, he was looking to push the pace. And Luis Pena, for me, just seemed like he wanted to just show how flashy you were. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm just going to like lay back a bit. I'm just going to do what I need to do just to get by. And it were a three-round fight. And for me, I don't think he did enough. But weirdly, the judges give it him. But yeah, I do believe Alex won that fight.
Yeah, from trying to like watch both events simultaneously, obviously you do miss stuff. But from the action that I caught, it seemed like Pena was trying to use his range that he has over pretty much everyone in that division to keep Munoz at bay. But Munoz was very able to successfully get in that pocket and land the shots. And whilst I don't think Pena was hurt much in the fight, I also don't think he did enough perhaps to win. But the judges obviously gave it the other way. So let's now switch to the Triller fight. And we started off with Sugar Sean O'Malley, UFC's own. He was doing a little bit of analysis, and he thought that Jake Paul would be able to handily beat Ben Askren. And then we went into the opening contest. Joe Fournier, I believe he's a former boxer. He was taking on Raycon, who is a musician. I'm sorry, guys. I do not know half these people on this card. So if I butcher their names or I don't know who they are, I apologize. But basically, Raycon fought for two rounds, didn't land a single punch, and then decided for the third round, I'm not coming out for that. So he lost by TKO. Let's go back to UFC. Tracy Cortez taking on Justine Kish. Carlos, how did this fight go down?
Well, let's put it this way. This fight was actually more impressive than any of them boxing fights. I haven't even watched any of them. Yeah, Tracy came in. She hasn't had a fight in the last 2 years, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been out for a while.
she came back in just a perfect execution of a game plan. This is everything you ask for a fighter. This was a dogfight between the pair of them. They both came in and threw it all and left it all in the octagon, throwing leather to face and just going back and forth training. But Tracy was, fortunately for her, was able to push the pace a little bit more, was able to control the situation when it got to the ground. Keish didn't seem to have any answer to when Tracy were able to take her down onto the...
Yeah.
There was no answer to it. Tracy could just take her down at will and keep her there and transition. So, yeah, that were inevitably what won her the fact that she were able to not only push the pace on the feed, but were able to just take her down just at will and control her just whenever she wanted to. And to someone who's been off for 2 years, that's pretty impressive to come back and just do something like that. It'd be so dominant in your performance. It's usually you come back and you might have a bit of a rough patch. It goes to the decision and you might be like, oh, maybe next time. But no, she comes straight back and she just dominated near enough three rounds straight and walked away with the victory.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, from what I caught of this fight, I think you've nailed it perfectly. When Cortez wanted to go to the ground, the fight went to the ground. I've got to give props to Justine Kish. She's got a lot of heart, and she did land a lot of shots when she had the opportunity, when stood up. But if Cortez went for a takedown, she generally got it and was able to really dominate on the floor. And like you said, 2 years out and to be able to come back and score that victory, well played to her. Got a few comments here from my Radio Techers brother, Tanner. He's calling Fabianski Flapianski. Ironic that we'll probably have someone more Flapianski later on in this broadcast. And then he's also said, Carlos, did the right thing sticking to UFC this evening. You know what? I fully agree. So on that, let's nip back to this thriller fight card. So after we got the opening bout, we got, I want to say, a weird kind of concert.
Another shit fight.
No, this was a con. Don't get me wrong. This is called Thriller Fight Club, but this was a concert with farts as the piss breaks. We got Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, and two other rappers who I absolutely have no idea who they were. And again, I apologize. I want to say rapping, but more smoking weed and miming along to a track. Apparently, there's going to be an album coming out called Mount Westmore, which is for that huge name rappers. Not really my cup of tea, but I'm sure it'll be a big hit. And then we had another concert by someone called Doja Cat. Again, don't know the girl. Didn't wear a lot of clothes, to be fair. That's on her.
Doja Cat, don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Then we actually got a fight. We did actually get a fight. And I've got to give props to Pete Davidson on this. Apparently, he's on SNL Live. Again, I don't know a lot about the guy. But he was the funniest thing about this show. He absolutely just abused everything. He said that this was a clown show. He was only happy because his check got cleared. But we did get a slap fight on a boxing show, a slap fight, hosted by Ric Flair, which, woo.
Well, when you came in and told me there was a slap fight, I thought you were on about boxing. They're actually slapping each other. No. You said slap fight. If you pay £50 for this event, you are a big bellend.
Yeah, well, I don't think they've made money on it. Let's just say that, because it gets more interesting later on. Anyway, let's get back to UFC. And before we get to that, sorry, the slap fight, I don't know who the two guys were, but one guy slapped the other guy unconscious. That happened. Next fight, Abdul Razak Hassan taking on Jacob Malkoon. Carlos, what happened in this? Because this was yet another decision.
Another decision, but a perfect decision. This is one of the fights where you looked at it, if you were casual, you'll think, oh, this is a boring fight, but technically it actually wasn't. Now, if you were to know Abdul, he's basically 2-0 in the UFC, I think off the top of my head, finishes. He's an absolute killer, but that is exactly what he is. He's an absolute killer.
He won his first fight. I think he had to drop out of his second fight. I'm sure he did. But he is a killer.
Yeah. No, that's it. He's just big, he's just muscular, and he'll finish in the first round. And that's exactly his sort of game plan. With people like that, and I suppose you can sort of blame it on Dana White and the UFC for always looking for these finishes who are a big muscle. Like, look at Ngannou. If he goes past the first or second round, odds are he's not knocking people out and might lose that belt. That's if he's facing Bones. But then again, this came with the same sort of consequence. Jacob were able to use his pressure to pressure Abdul up against the cage, and were able to use his wrestling and just push the pace. And even though he was a smaller guy, he didn't have the muscle, he wasn't stronger, he knew he were able to push the pace for longer, and he wouldn't be able to tire out quicker than Abdul were, because Abdul just gassed so goddamn quick, especially with all the takedowns getting through at him. How many times he had to sprawl, how many times he had to try and defend the takedown, and how many times he had to try and get back to his feet. Got to the second and third round, and every time he got to the floor, he didn't have the energy to get back to his feet. And yeah, Jacob were able to mix it up really well between the boxing and the level changes, the shooting. There's nothing really much more to say apart from, if you wanted to write a perfect game plan against an absolute monster, that's the game plan you want to pick.
Yeah.
You don't give him the space, you pressure him, and you make him fight your fight. You make it frustrating for him, because that's all Abdul wanted to do. He's one of them fighters where they want to bang, they want to stand and bang. He's mixed martial arts, he's not boxing. So you don't fight his game.
Yeah.
You fight your game, and that's exactly what Jacob were able to do. He mixed his boxing up really well with his wrestling, took it to the decision, and he absolutely dominated from start to finish.
Yeah, and for a young kid of the age of Jacob Malkoon to be able to stick to a game plan and not fall into that trap of fighting someone else's fight, well played to him. And you could see how much he frustrated Abdul, because Abdul was led on the cage floor for a long time after the fight had finished, and that's because he'd been outshone. It's as simple as that, and he just couldn't fight the fight that he wanted, and he wasn't able to mix it up to match Jacob Malkoon. So it's a great victory for Jacob there. let's get back to Triller. Frank Mir was up next, and I was worried for Frank.
Put the steroid down.
Yeah, I was absolutely worried for Frank. This is the heaviest I've ever seen him. He looked absolutely a mess. Coming in 70 pounds heavier than Steve Cunningham. And this is Steve Cunningham, who's a legitimate former world champion boxer. He hasn't fought in about 4 years. And this is where you kind of suspect. I mean, you generally suspect that this card was fixed in a way. But this match really kind of hammed it down, because Steve Cunningham could have killed Frank Mir if he wasn't holding back. And props to Frank Mir, he lasted the full 6 rounds. He was absolutely knackered after half of a round, but he gave it all. He kept going, and he didn't let up for a second. But you could tell this was Steve Cunningham toying with him. And at any point in this fight, you could have foresee Steve Cunningham just absolutely dropping Frank Mir and putting him fast asleep. But he didn't. Steve Cunningham picked up the victory, and Frank Mir, I think he can have a lot of respect in the fact that he's done this, especially against someone who was, like I said, was an actual boxer. Let's go on to the core main event of the UFC card. This wasn't actually going to be the core main event. This was actually going to be smack dab in the middle of the card. But as Carlos will tell you, getting pushed at a weigh-ins can give you whiplash, apparently.
Well, it's not whiplash. Jerry Stevens and fucking whatever his name is.
Draka Klauser.
Draka Klauser. They were at the face-offs, and something happened, and Jerry Stevens ended up pushing him. He's ended up, when he's pushed him, he started to feel his hand going numb and started to feel his neck going numb. And then it was after that, he basically got sent by Sean Shelby to the UFC PI and stuff like that, and got sent to the medical team, got some scans, got some checks, basically had to get some rehydration, get some rest, because they thought it could be just a bad wake up, could be having some effect on him. Found out it weren't that after when he was hydrated, because after when he did get hydrated and rested, he ended up basically feeling dizzy, and then he rested again, a bit more hydrated, and then spewing. They sent him to the hospital. His scans have come back now. They came back, I think, halfway during the event, and he's actually got a critical sprain in his neck from the push.
Yeah. He was on Twitter claiming effects of whiplash. Now, I am not condoning Jeremy Stephens laying hands at the weigh-ins. I don't like that kind of shit. But if you have had whiplash and numb arms from being pushed at a weigh-ins,
yeah,
you were probably going to get killed in a fight.
Yeah, it's probably the best thing, to be honest. I know it's going to be horrible, but it's, if that were going to happen to you just from a push, then... And if your neck was already hurt, imagine if he kicked you in the neck or just punched you in the neck. Mm-hmm. It could have been fair. So if anything, count yourself some lucky eggs there. But we did get into the co-main event, and it was one of the legends in the game. Andre Arlovski versus Chase Sherman.
Chase Sherman, yeah. Just before we get into that, Tanner has come back with a comment about Frank Mir. Frank Mir needs to clean himself up and transition into pro wrestling. Very, very true. And he's not the only person on this trailer card who I think has got a future in pro wrestling, but we'll get to that in a minute. Go on, Carlos, tell us about Arlovski and Chase Sherman.
Arlovski, he's getting quite old now. I don't know whether he...
53 fights.
53 fights, that's mm-hmm. what I mean. He's been in the UFC, I think, since 2003.
34 right. UFC fights.
Yeah, absolutely mental. I think he's coming up just behind Bisping, or just somewhere along the lines of Bisping, if they're having that many fights. And I can see him hanging it up soon, because he's not getting anywhere close to a title. He doesn't need to earn any more money. The guys, he must be minted by now. If not, then people are out and they say, fucking UFC don't pay the fighters, fuck all. But because he's been in the UFC for absolutely donkeys. But good for him, he did get the win. He was able to use his legendary tactics and his fight IQ to make sort of Chase Sherman sort of have to like chase him around the octagon. Again, a lot of people would have looked at this and gone, oh, like stay still and fight him, but it was the tactics the way he did. Mm-hmm. Arlovski was able to beat the leg up of Chase basically coming forward, affected his mobility, affected him from getting the heavy punches, and affected him from moving around fast. So even when Arlovski was staying from out the range and staying at a distance, Chase just wasn't able to get him. And he was actually getting frustrated because you could see him talk to him like, stop fucking moving, just stop and fight. And it's
I think he said near the end of the fight, something like, I thought you was a legend.
Yeah, well, that's it. And it's like, at the end of the day, he's a legend, because that's how legends win, because you lost.
Yeah.
So
it was a clinic in counterfighting.
Exactly.
And it worked perfectly. Obviously, Arlovski recognised that Chase was a big hitter, and staying in the pocket and taking them shots, it's only going to end one way. So Arlovski, using, like I said, that fire IQ and able to avoid those shots while still picking Sherman off with the kicks and the punches, it worked perfectly well. And I mean, I'm all for saying when fighters should call it a day, but Arlovski's still picking up wins, and he's still looking like he belongs there. So fight until you're ready to quit.
This is what I'm saying. I'm not saying that he needs to retire. It's just how many more fights do you reckon? Because like I said, he's been in it for a hell of a long time, and he's been knocked out a couple of times now. And it's not like he took a lot of damage over the last couple of years. But again, I don't think he's looking at chasing them title bouts anytime soon. So it would be probably a good idea for him to, well, if he's saying that though, if he's staying in fights like this, he can fight fucking forever, because he's never aging. If anything, he's getting younger. But yeah, with the fight itself, the way it went, it were a perfect exhibition of just his skill set and of just what fight IQ can actually do. You don't always have to be an heavy hitter to win a fight. Mm-hmm. If anything, that can always work against you. And it goes to show a lot of people who are heavy hitters always lead that leg out too far, and it's always there to get kicked, always there to get fucked up.
Correct. So let's go back to trailer. Just before we got into the co-main event, Trailer Fight Club replaced Oscar De La Hoya on commentary because he was absolutely cocaine out of his face, just did not have a clue what he was talking about. And they replaced him with Snoop Dogg, who was absolutely stoned off his tree. But the good thing is, it was way more entertaining than Oscar De La Hoya. But we got into this co-main event, and it was actually two boxers, Regis Progre taking on Arvin Rebkach. And yeah, this fight was meant to go 10 rounds, ended up only going six. Progre just absolutely dominated Arvin Rebkach. But the ending was so... It was WWE style. And we talked. I talked earlier about how the ending for the Romanov fight was pretty weird with the low blow. The thing is, Romanov got low blowed and he was down. And the result went the way it is. This one, even with the slow motion replays, the punch not only isn't a low blow, it barely touches Arvin Rebkach. The shot from Progre goes all the way around the body. It's the thumb of the glove glances against like the top of the hip of Arvin Rebkach. His arms block the wrist and the forearm of Progre making any contact. And then he goes down like he's been absolutely punched in the dick. Stayed down for 5 minutes. The referee's saying, yeah, it may be a disqualification. The guy is stretched out of the building, and I'm not even taking the piss. He's absolutely stretched out of the building from a shot that made no contact with him. Luckily, the ref saw the replay, and it went to the judge's decision because it went over half of the fight, and all the judges pretty much gave it unanimously for Reggie Progre. But on a card of ridiculousness, this may have been the most ridiculous. Then we had, I mean, I don't want to disparage Whitaker and Gaslam, so we're going to cover that last.
Definitely.
But then we had another concert. Justin Bieber came on, did a few tracks to a crowd of nobody, because when he was saying, how are you all feeling tonight, there was crickets. This Triller event has lost millions. Absolute millions. So we had a bit of an impromptu, but they put a lot of production into it. We had a Justin Bieber concert, which was awful. Yes. Then we got the main event, and if this is not fixed, I will eat my hat, because Jake Paul knocked out Ben Askren in less than 2 minutes. He caught him clean, and you can tell that Ben Askren was only there for a payday. He didn't look like he was into the fight at all, barely threw any shots. The shots that Jake Paul landed, some of them looked heavy, some of them looked like fairy taps. The one that actually knocked him out was nothing special. He knocked Ben Askren down, Ben got up, the ref called it off, even though Ben he seemed absolutely fine, able to walk around. And for me, what rubber stamped the fact that this was maybe a bit of a setup was Ben Askren was laughing and giggling on the way back to the locker rooms, and then it just ended in a farce. So let's go back to an actual fight, Carlos. What happened with Whitaker and Gastelum?
There we go. Now an actual fight that everyone should have actually been watching instead of that shit pathetic show of fucking people taking dives full of pussies.
I mean, the worry is TrillerNet, the company that owns Triller Fight Club, have actually bought Fight TV in a huge deal. So this stuff ain't going away, unfortunately. I mean, whether you like it or whether you don't, celebrity boxing is a big thing, and it's going to be here to stay, I think.
I'll box you. You can keep my off as well. I'll give it you after when I whoop piss out you. Cockend.
Anyway, get on to this Robert Whitaker.
Robert Whitaker, again, this fight should have happened in 2019. It got basically delayed. Some shit happened. Can't remember off the top of my head. But thankfully, it happened tonight and we were able to see the spectacular performance from both guys. Both of them have improved since 2019, that they were supposed to fight. Unfortunately, along the way, both of them have also had to fight Izzy and lost, so they've both got something in common there, so there was definitely something to basically come back on. Robert Whitaker was supposed to actually be originally fighting Paulo Costa, but Paulo Costa's a big pussy, and he pulled out. He only fights out one time a year or something, don't know why he's in the UFC. So, upsets Kelvin Gastelum on a month's notice, and fair enough. they both have a month's training camp, and you'd think, oh shit, this is going to be a bit of a crap fight. Hey, we're a barn burner, this was a quality fight from start to finish. They both said it in 2019, they both said it last night, they're going to take each other's head off, and they weren't lying. They tried to take each other's head off. Kelvin were bloody, Whitaker were bloody. There were sprawls, there were takedowns, there were combos, there were more head kicks than you could count. Like it, they're a mixed martial arts bout all in one fight. What happened tonight between Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum, it was an all-out brawl. Them two came to put on a show, and you could see that they was coming to show who was next in line for that title shot.
Yeah.
We had a bout last week, that ugly Italian guy and Kevin Holly. Martin Vettori, yeah. Martin Vettori, who's a bigger pussy than Costa. And then you've got Kevin Holland, who can't wrestle for shit, but thinks he can fight for a title. But yeah, we had that pitiful main event last week. So yeah, definitely from this performance on what happened tonight between Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum, that already beats that out of the water for going into title contention of which fight actually is the number one title contender. It was definitely this fight. And Robert Whittaker, he wasn't the games that the holes that he was sure that he shown in the Adesanya fight, where he was sort of shooting in for the right and jumping in for the left hook. He wasn't doing this sort of stuff, and especially with the two fights you see him with Yoel Romero, he was making some mistakes there that I didn't see once that he made in this fight between Kelvin Gastelum. It was just on point from start to finish. Mm-hmm. He knew exactly what he had to do. He understood his range, and he was fast. He was more fast than what he usually is. And obviously, after the fight, he came out. He's like, "That's because I was supposed to fight Costa, so I was working on speed." Again, if you're fighting a big guy who's just jacked, he's slow as fuck. Costa, you're a pussy. Get out. So yeah, speed's always gonna. You take speed all day over power. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but he were able to control Whittaker. And I feel so bad for Gastelum, because he's worked his arse off so much, and he's never going to be, he's always going to be in that position where you had your Paul Davis and all that sort of stuff, and people who had that John Bones Jones in the way, and people who could just, it was so close to that title, but just couldn't reach it. And I think that's the sort of position he's in, like, he's not on a good record. And to be honest with him, weirdly, his teammate was sat there, and I'm a big believer in stuff like that. When if you're getting bad vibes from your teammates, you're not going to have a good night. And I personally believe his own teammate wanted him to lose out of spitefulness, because his own teammate, I'd say that he trains with Marvin Vettori, and he was sat there watching the fight, and he wanted the belt, and he, in his head, if Kelvin knocks out Whittaker, which were a massive chance, he's an hard bastard, that he could have fought for the belt. And yeah, so I think out of spite, he were probably thinking, hoping for Gastelum to lose. But be careful what you're, well, in this case, in my personal opinion, if it is true, be careful what you wish for, because this is a scary Whittaker that's potentially just only going into his prime.
Yep.
who's literally off. Fair enough, he took a couple of cracks from Kelvin Gastelum, but you fight him and he'll take a couple of cracks. Let's see how that goes for you. You're definitely taking some, and he were able to eat them like they were nothing. They didn't phase him one bit, whereas he were eating Kelvin, and you could see where he were like stunning him a bit here and there. And yeah, perfect victory for him. Perfect. Gone straight to the decision. He was always looking for the finish as well. That was a good thing about it. He wasn't just going, right, I've got to fifth round, I'm literally four rounds up, I can course it now.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing that. He was still trying to look for the finish from literally to the end of the bell. And that's one thing you got to respect about Whittaker. He was a champion before, and he'll always will be a true champion. Mm-hmm. And he would definitely will be the next fight, is he, for the belt.
And I think it needs to be remembered that Gastelum's losses are against killers. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who's potentially in Demetrius Johnson style territory in the weight division that he's in isn't really for him.
Well, let's put it this way.
For me, I think he's a welterweight.
He's definitely a welterweight. Because like I say, he's a push, welterweight, lightweight, just because of his heart. But if his build, I'd say more welterweight because he's a bit more of a stocky character. But like you say, with his losses, you got Izzy and you got Whitaker. But then you got Till, who was arguably...
And that was a split decision as well.
Yeah. So it's not like he's lost in dramatic fashion. It's always like somewhat gone. Because even with Izzy, it went to decision. Mm-hmm. And he's given Izzy the best fight anybody's given Izzy up to date.
The only loss in the last 4 years is by a finish is when he got caught in the heel hook by Jack Hermanson.
So that's what I mean. So he's literally up there with the best, and Whitaker were able to just dominate him. So yeah, you can't not. If they were to give the other guy the title shot after basically humping Kevin Owens' legs for 5 rounds, then I'm gonna start watching UFC.
I don't think that's accurate.
What
anyway, so. Great victory for Robert Whittaker. I'm glad he's got over like the persistent knee problems that he's had, and he's definitely gonna give Izzy a tough battle coming up. But we've got a triple main event next week, Carlos. I hope you've got your Triller hat on for that.
Ooh, that's gonna be a good one.
I mean, this main card is stacked. The two fights that aren't title fights could potentially be a fight night headliners. So you've got Anthony Smith taking on one of your favourite fighters, Jimmy Crute. You've got Uriah Hall taking on Chris Weidman. And then the three title fighters, Valentina Shevchenko, putting a flyweight title on the line against Jessica Andrade. And you've got Wei Li Zhang defending against Rose Namajunas, which is going to be an absolute banger. And then you've got Street Jeebus taking on the champion, Kamaru Usman, for the welterweight. So looking forward to that next week.
Definitely. Check that out when... Check that out with us. That's going to be a banger of a card.
Absolutely, it is. So just before we go, let us do a little bit of bill paying. First, thank you, everyone, for watching and listening along. Your support is always appreciated. And if you like what we do here at Shooting the Sports-ish, please consider joining our Patreon with plenty of new and exciting and unique content coming to the Patreon. So that's patreon.com/shootsportsish. For just a few shekels, you can get multiple hours of extra content. And we've also got a new deal with a great sponsor called Sleefs. That's sleefs.com, sleefs.com, where you can get fat wear, compression gear, protection if elite level fighters, and also they do some pretty kick-ass clothing and underwear. So if you use the code STSR25, you'll get 25% off your first order, and I do believe that code is continuous, so even on your follow-up orders you still get a pretty good discount. So that's www.sleefs.com, sleefs.com. But again, thank you guys for tuning in. We really do appreciate all your support. A special thanks to Tanner for keeping it up in the chat. I'll be definitely speaking to you later on today, sir. But yeah, for me, Mags at DJ Kurtbe, for Carlos here at Kurtbe_Carlos, and for the teams at Shooting the Sports, Asian Business Global Media, and Chairshot Radio, we thank you. Good night, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.